Welcome back to Maritime Morning. We're going to tell you, I think, one of Canada's greatest war stories. Last night in Halifax, retired Vice Admiral Larry Murray was honored with the Leonard Burchill Leadership Award. And it's an award that's given out to a member of Canada's military who has served with distinction in a leadership role, and obviously the Admiral did so. The award, though, is named after a Canadian pilot whom Winston Churchill called the Savior of Ceylon. And for my money, it is one of the most compelling, if not the most compelling, war stories to emerge from the Second World War. Google his name, Leonard Burchill, if you're by a computer. And that name should sit as among the greatest heroes of our country. Arguably, his heroic efforts identifying the movements of the Japanese fleet was one of the most pivotal pieces of intelligence that was gathered during the war, which was one of the reasons that Winston Churchill spoke of him. The character and leadership that he demonstrated after his subsequent capture and his internment in a Japanese prisoner of war camps is nothing short of awe-inspiring. Well, joining me this morning, I have the great pleasure to be joined in studio by Leonard Burchill's daughter, Sharon Chandler, who was at the dinner last night and joins me this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it's an honor.
This, I mentioned it earlier, I felt a little ashamed of myself. Bill Gard, who's in the studio listening with us here this morning as well, sent me an email and he said, we'd be delighted if you'd be able to be a master of ceremonies at this dinner, this Leonard Burchill dinner. And I kind of looked at it and I was going, what's this all about? And then he sent me the video that was narrated by Scott Taylor, which I should say is available as well. There's a DVD out there and some of the documentation around your father. And frankly, I felt a little ashamed that I hadn't heard of him. It is truly one of the great, as I mentioned, one of the great war stories here of our Canadian history. Why do you, I mean, has it been confined to the military? I mean, has the military kind of grasped this as a, it seems to me that more people should know about this.
I think that's true too, but he was a war hero within the Canadian context, and we don't glorify and laud our heroes such as the way the Americans do, for instance, with theirs. And this is very much a Canadian thing. Most of what's been written about him has been written by people outside Canada, particularly the Americans and the Brits, but not here. However, there is somebody that is thinking about working on it. And I feel very fortunate that we were lucky enough to have Mr. Nielsen of Norflix do the DVD just shortly before her father died, because otherwise we would never have had that lengthy interview that has made such a compelling DVD.
Hmm. I've noticed that we were reporting this morning that the numbers seem to be going up a little bit in terms of people who are prepared to go out and recognize, the sacrifices that have been made by our military in terms of Remembrance Day. And I'm wondering if we're simply just maturing in terms of our understanding of our military history.
I think it, too, sadly, is partly due to the war in Afghanistan, because Canadian soldiers are dying again, and that hits the news. And a lot has been made of their return home, the highway of heroes sort of thing. It's brought the awareness back about our servicemen and what they do for the country and how much we owe them.
Let's talk about your dad. I'd like you to tell the story. Obviously, we've only got about a half an hour here, but it's and there's so many components to this. But tell us when he entered the war. He's a young man, and the outbreak of the Second World War. Pick it up from there, and where his career began.
Well, remember, I was daughter of, and so much of what I'm going to say and what you might say and Bill might say is from documentation, because I grew up with Dad, not with Len Burchill, the war hero. And that's a very different perspective. So what I have learned, I've learned mostly as an adult, because as children, children just don't absorb this sort of thing.
Did he talk about this around the house?
Not at all.
Ever?
He never talked about the war. He talked about it with my mother, obviously, but we children never heard him speak of it. And I think you will find in interviewing other veterans that that's a common thing. They come home and they put it behind them, except where they have to speak of it. And Dad didn't. He would in speeches. He would speak of his experiences in speeches, using it to illustrate a point or to bring home an idea. And he had a wicked sense of humor. So he would try and leaven the stories with some humor as well. But at home, no, not at all. I only ever heard him speak of the war once, and that's when he didn't know I was listening.
I want to pick it up when he was flying in. I mean, as I understand, he was actually one of the first pilots to actually fly out of Shearwater here on a war mission.
Yeah.
But he came to the attention of Winston Churchill eventually because of his efforts in the South Pacific. So let's pick it up there on the mission that he went out on. I guess we'll call it that fateful mission.
Yes. Well, he had flown into Ceylon. And this was in 1942. And the very next day after arriving, he went out on this mission. It was just a normal mission, which was their job while they were there. And he spotted, well, not he, but one of his crew members spotted some dots on the horizon. And they were due to go home. It was the end of their flight. And they decided they'd check it out. And it was the fleet.
They were flying a Catalina flying boat.
Yes, they
boat.
Were. Mm-hmm. And they radioed back the news, and they went in closer to make sure. They did not want to make a mistake. And, of course, at that point, they were spotted, and they were shot down. Not all of the crew survived that particular landing on the water. They had they got Mae Wests on the ones that had been injured during the shooting. And, unfortunately, they were sitting ducks because whenever the warplanes came in to strafe them in the water, they ducked, but the ones in the life jackets, of course, couldn't, and they were killed. And then the sharks came in, given the location, there were sharks. And they thought they were all going to die, but then the Japanese twigged to the idea that maybe they wanted to make sure that, in fact, the message had gotten back. They wanted to know whether they were had been revealed or not. And so they got some boats into the water and rescued those that were left, my dad amongst them. And unfortunately, while Dad and his crew members were staunchly denying the fact that they'd gotten a message out, Ceylon came back and asked them to repeat the message. And so the Japanese knew that they were that their mission had been revealed. So the invasion didn't occur, which Churchill said later was a pivotal moment in the war.
It was an enormous piece of intelligence that was made available to the British fleet.
Yeah.
And that was the position of the Japanese fleet at the time. So your dad was taken on board a ship.
Yes.
Interrogated.
Yes.
Beaten.
Oh, yes.
Badly.
Badly.
And he was the senior officer.
He was. He was the senior officer in all of the camps where he was interned. And it was a particularly brutal regime, unlike those prisoners of war in Germany. And when you're mentioning the beating, whenever one of his subordinates or one of the lower ranks was deemed to have be deserving of punishment, they would be beaten, but he would be too, because the Japanese felt that as the senior Allied officer, he should keep his men in line, or the men in line. And when they didn't, he was beaten as well. And they had a method of beating a prisoner of war always in the same place on the body so that it never healed. And in his case, it was his throat, which is where he got cancer later on. That's what he died of, was cancer.
Yeah. Sharon Chandler is the daughter of Leonard Burchill. Leonard Burchill was a Canadian pilot. As you've heard, Winston Churchill referred to him as the savior of Ceylon. He was responsible for a piece of intelligence that essentially changed the direction of the war, not just the war in Japan. I mean, it had broader implications as well. But he was taken into these prisoner of war camps because they were moved around for some time.
Yes.
And your dad became, I think this, you know, in spite of the obvious contribution that he made mm-hmm. in terms of gathering that intelligence, that from my perspective in reading his story, he became a Canadian war hero as a result of the leadership that he demonstrated and the character mm-hmm. that he demonstrated when he was in these Japanese war camps. Mm-hmm. The conditions, I don't think, it would be difficult for many of us to understand the brutality mm-hmm. without witnessing it firsthand. You know, we think of the dreadful nature of war, but the cruelty that was inflicted upon Allied soldiers in these Japanese war camps is, well, it's legendary.
Yeah,
it really
yeah.
is. And the interesting thing is that I found the way that the Japanese officers or the Japanese military would deal with this is that that relationship between the commanding officer and the Japanese officers are very different. There was not, you know, the idea of the Geneva Convention, you know, at play in those camps was ludicrous. But so tell me just a little bit about how he perceived his role in terms of protecting the folks under his command, if you will, in those camps, that being the other Allied soldiers.
Well, he certainly felt that they were all in the same ship together, so to speak. It was not the officers having some privileges that those who were not officers or those who were junior officers would be denied. The Japanese would, as I understand it, would offer special privileges to officers in exchange for various things that they wanted them to do. And he would always not do that. He felt very strongly that, yes, he was a senior Allied officer, but they were all there together. And in order to survive, they had to support each other, irrespective of what they did in real life. So he would not let officers eat more than the men would eat, or senior officers eat more than junior officers would eat. He would not let some people have medicine and others not. So they operated probably as the most perfect team that one can have, absent the fact that he would act as a leader when Japanese were trying to get sick men to work. He would be the one to step forward and say, no, this man's not going to work today, for which he would be beaten. The Japanese, as I understand it, came into this whole thing with a great deal of disrespect for all of the prisoners of war, because they felt they should not have allowed themselves to be captured. They felt that the honorable thing to have done would have been to commit suicide rather than submit to being a prisoner of war. That's a totally different mindset from the Western mind. And so they did not treat any of these men, even the senior man, with any degree of respect whatsoever. So it was a constant battle of wills. And Father certainly felt that as a senior officer, he would not permit his men, any of his men, to be treated in other than the laid down conditions of the Geneva War Convention. And so they were constantly at odds. And he went through some pretty terrible experiences as a result of that.
I know it's difficult to talk about it, and it's difficult to hear, but I want to explore some of that as well on the day that he was taken away to be executed as well, and his response to that. His name is Leonard Birchall, truly a Canadian war hero, an example of exemplary leadership, and is why they have the Leonard Birchall Award, which is given away for leadership in the Canadian forces. There was a dinner last night, as I mentioned. Vice Admiral Larry Murray was the recipient of that award this year. Sharon Chandler is Leonard Birchall's daughter. He's in studio with us. We'll take a quick break and be back with more of this fascinating story next on Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. I'm Jordy Morgan. Sharon Chandler is in the studio. Sharon Chandler is the daughter of Leonard Birchall. It's a fascinating story. There are so many different components to it. We can't tell it all, but there's some interesting parts that I wanted to relate to our listeners. One having to do with the day when he was actually taken away and threatened with execution. I mean, is it a difficult story for you to kind of?
I hope not.
Tell, but tell me what happened on that day and why he found himself in a situation where they were going to take his life.
Well, once again, he was defending his men, particularly, I think probably the most constant interaction with the Japanese, as I understand it, was they would make men work. That was, they used the POWs to do a lot of work. And because of the diet and because of the treatment, poor treatment, and because of the lack of medication, men were often ill and unable to work, as we would understand their condition to be. And the Japanese would insist that they work anyway. It didn't matter if they died while they were working. And father would insist that, no, they could not work, and he would stand up for them and get beaten for it. But on many an occasion, the man actually would be left to try and get better while the others went off to work. And on one occasion, he was told he was going to be executed, and he was taken off. And they were going to behead him, they told him. And he was meant to kneel down, which he did. He had no choice. And instead of beheading him, they brought the sword just sort of within a hair's breadth of his, the top of his head. And this, of course, I can't begin to imagine it, but this would have a very, I don't know, upsetting is a very weak word, effect on the person that this was being done to. And they did this to him several times. And when they felt that he was suitably demeaned, they stood him up and said that instead they were going to shoot him. He wasn't worthy of being beheaded. And unfortunately, he was highly emaciated, as they all were. He was skeletal, and they his clothing was fit him probably at the beginning, but no longer did. And every time he was told to stand at his attention, at attention, in order to be shot in proper format, his pants would fall down. And they'd stop and make him pull them up again, and then this went on, and it became rather like a farce, an Abbott and Costello act. And they eventually said that he was not worthy of being executed as an officer and a gentleman, and they took him away. So he, for me, this is a story where, were it to happen to me, I would just, I don't think I could repeat it. But he not only told the story, but he told it with great humor. And that was, I think it's the sense of humor that is the final thing that keeps you going under bad circumstances.
There's a fascinating chapter to this story when he, in fact, had the opportunity to escape. And I guess he was plotting this. There were flying boats. He was a pilot, so he made the assumption that if he was, they were actually able to get to the plane, then they could get on the plane and they could fly away. And he was stopped by one of his men because of something that they said.
Now that is a story that's new to me. People keep coming up to me and telling me stories that I didn't know.
Well,
I said he didn't speak about this at home.
I'll paraphrase it because I had just read about this and I thought it was really quite amazing because one of his partners there, and they were plotting and to do all of this, and one of his partners essentially said, "Well, you can go back, and you can fly, if you like. But there are probably lots of pilots and probably pilots that are better than you to do this job. But you are the only person who can do this job to lead these prisoners in this circumstance."
Yeah, no, I can see that.
And that changed. At that point, he just essentially abandoned all of his plans to escape because he realized the importance that he had with his men. And this was the thing that I think is really remarkable about him is his ability to his selflessness, and that is that humble, quiet courage and character that allowed him to put his men ahead of his own welfare. And that is why he's been given the tributes that he has been given.
Well, I do know that at one point somebody asked him, how could you possibly have gone through all this? And he said, all of us expected to be dead any day. None of us thought we would ever get out alive. And so we had to make the best of what we had and just get on every day.
When you grew up your dad died in 2002, when you were a little older, did you sit down and have those conversations with him about his feelings and the experience? I know it's as a child, they don't relate these things, but did you have some of those one-to-ones with him? Because, I know there's I think of my own dad and my grandfather for that matter, and the difficulty they had expressing some of the things that happened to them during the war. Did you have any of those conversations?
No, he didn't with any of his children. I don't think he was comfortable talking to family about it, particularly, because he saw it in the context of work, of a job. He was working when he was part of the Canadian military when he was in the prisoners of war camp, and that was separate from his family life. He loved family life. He loved family occasions and this sort of thing. But that it was almost as if it was two separate worlds, and I don't think he would have been comfortable talking about it. He knew we'd read about it and hear about it, and I think that was sufficient for him.
Hmm. It's one of those stories that I think every school child should be made aware of, and perhaps we can do a little bit more to make our kids and everybody aware of, you know, some of the great heroism that lies underneath the service of the Canadian military, because
exactly.
That's what Remembrance Day is all about. It's been a delight to have you here. Thank you. It was a wonderful experience last night to be a part of that dinner as well.
And also for me.
And to hear that, I'm sure it was, because there's some tremendous people that were being honored last night. And thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me to come. It's been a pleasure.
Sharon Chandler is the daughter of Air Commodore Leonard J. Burchill, a true Canadian war hero. As I said, spend a little time, Google his name, I should say, and read up on the story and pass it along. It really is one that would make you proud. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Rick Howe is going to be in. We're going to have our Friday face-off. We have a few things to chat about this morning of some interest. Actually, we're going to talk a little bit about hunting as well. Rick has some sort of an aversion to hunting, but he doesn't mind frying up a pretty good venison steak. We'll talk about that. We're also going to be talking about why in Edmonton, they are actually making it optional for some children to participate in Remembrance Day activities because of cultural sensitivities. We'll find out what that's all about. And we'll open up the lines for our Friday free-for-all, where you can talk about anything you would like to talk about. That follows our newscast in the next hour here on Maritime Morning.